We have 2 weeks left. This week I'm going to continue talking about obstacles that come up that we face. Next week we're going to end on a positive note, and hopefully this has been an encouragement. I mean, it's a big topic, obviously, and as Pastor Gary talked this morning, and as we've gone through this class, it's impossible really to carry out our faith in the way that God wants us to, and live in a manner worthy of our calling without the interaction we have with each other, with one another. And one of the things that, as I prepared for today and as I was listening this morning, that kind of sticking out to me is that there are times, these things come and go, don't they? These various seasons of life come into, different challenges come in. We're on a roller coaster. Sometimes we're doing well and we're focused on the Lord, focused on others, and sometimes we get distracted and fall off the wagon and have struggles and troubles, and these things come and go. And so we're in constant need of remembering and looking at ourselves in a mirror sometimes and reflecting on, you know, are we following the Lord, or have we fallen away? Have we gotten sidetracked and distracted? And obviously, Satan is constantly he set up this world system to bring us down and to distract us from what we are supposed to be doing. One of the things that, one of the big challenges we face, and I've asked a couple times in this class, what are the things that come up that causes trouble with our friendships and relationships? And the one that came up every time I asked was busy lives. And so I'm going to wrap this into a little bit larger topic. We're going to call busy lives priorities. And because the reality is that people have led busy lives for a long time. And as I was kind of thinking about this, it's like we have, in a modern sense, very busy lives with all the things that we have to do, information at our disposal. We can fill our time just like that. But if you think about it, before we had, you know, all of this kind of modern life, they had limited daylight. You know, they didn't even have, I mean, if you go back even 150 years, they didn't have electric in homes and things like that. They didn't have the ability to extend their day. So they had more condensed amounts of time even then, and they may not have had all of the things we have in terms of access to information, entertainment, and all those types of things, but they also had limited time. So this busyness in life is not something new that has just come upon us in the last, in our lifetimes here. The other thing that we can attach to that priorities thing is also money. So we're going to talk a little bit about both time and money. But I'm going to ask a question. What is the most important thing to God? Okay, condition of our hearts? Huh? Our worship. So ultimately, though, what does our worship gain him? Huh? Our Savior? His glory. That's what I'm looking for. All those things fit into his glory, but God is most concerned about his glory. And he is the only one, the only one in existence where that's okay, right? Where that's right. It's his right and his right alone to desire his glory and to be jealous over it. And to represent that, he provided the Savior, right? So he has his creation. He creates us. He creates this world. We sin pretty quickly and fall, and then we go through this entire process that we have that we see in Scripture where ultimately God sends his most precious treasure of heaven, which is his Son, to redeem us, his sinful creation. And a lot of times we look at that and say, well, you know, a lot of people, and you'll read books and such that will say, well, we're that important to God, right? Well, what's important to God is his glory. And he demonstrated his commitment to his glory by sending Jesus. And we are his display of his goodness and his grace. But let's not make a mistake. It's not the importance of man that did that. It was his desire for his own glory that motivated that. And it's a holy position. So the question we need to ask ourselves as it pertains to our relationships: so how important is God's glory to us? If it's the most important thing to him, shouldn't it be, as Christians, the most important thing to us also? How do you determine that? You know, if you are in a mode of trying to determine, am I pleasing the Lord in this way or not? What are some of the things we can look at to determine if we're actually pleasing the Lord or not? And there's two ways, two good mirrors. They're not the only two things, but time and money. How you use your time and how you use your money are two good ways to look in the mirror and to decide. And there are things that we can actually, if we're honest with ourselves, we can look at and say, okay, let's take a look at this. Turn your Bibles, if you would, to Ephesians 4. The first thing we're going to look at here is money. And the reason I'm turning to Ephesians 4 is because there's kind of this odd verse in here. Right in the middle of this entire passage of relationships, I turn back to 1 Timothy because that's where I was this morning. That's not going to help us any. Mike, would you read that? Read Ephesians 4, 25 through, let's do through 30. Okay, thanks. So it's kind of interesting because we're going through all of these verses here that are telling us all these things that seem to be pertaining directly to relationships. You got, you know, put aside falsehood, do not sin in your anger, edify and give grace, be kind and tenderhearted and forgiving in the next verse, so on and so forth. But then we have this verse 28 in there, and it's kind of it seems like it's kind of odd. Well, he who steals must steal no longer. Where did that come from? It doesn't seem to fit. But the verse actually has to do with generosity. And if you look at verse 28, it says, he who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so they will have something to share with the one who is in need. It's directly attached to relationships. So it's kind of a weird way to say it seems like, because it sounds like it's talking about just stop stealing. And it's more of a put off, put on type of a verse here. So you have stop stealing, get a job, be productive, so that you can give. And in the context of what's going on here, he's encouraging us to live in a manner worthy of his calling. He's encouraging us to love one another and do all these things. He puts this money thing right in the middle. So I want to look at that a little bit here. Generosity is it's kind of an interesting topic because you have different ways that you give. Obviously, we have you have giving to the church, you have giving to ministry, you have all of these things. You also have opportunities that come along typically of becoming aware of maybe someone in need that's here or a friend or something that needs help. And so these things kind of come up and we have to kind of wade through them. But what does the thing I want to focus on more than anything is what does money say about our relationship to God? We know that the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, but why? You know, we do all these things with. We're very focused on money. We're a very prosperous nation. Most of us have more than we need, and we have opportunities to be generous with one another. And it's always been a blessing to see, even you know, on the elder board and stuff, to see we have a church of, you know, 300-400 people here, and we're not full of rich people. We have very, you know, middle class kind of group here. We never have financial needs though that are very significant because we have generous people here, and it doesn't seem to matter. You know, we'll have people leave, and you think, man, that's going to hurt, but the giving's always there. It seems like. And we saw a little bit of a dip this last year because you can't lose 40 people in a year and not see some kind of a result there. But it's always been encouraging to see. We have such generous people here. So I'm not going to belabor the money side too much here, but we can't ignore it either. We do, you know, we'll look at our financial planning. It's important, and we can set up how we can help people in the future, right? You may be saving so that you can give to something in the future. You may be saving to leave your kids an inheritance. There's all these different things. Obviously, we know Proverbs says that a good man leaves his grandkids an inheritance. So it's talking about how you, it's a good thing to be able to be prosperous and to be wise and save and to be able to pass along those things. And so that's a good thing. But what it can come down to, if we're not careful, is what are we trusting in? And it's the same heart issue that happens with our relationships a lot of times. What are you trusting in? Are you trusting in your money for your security, or are you trusting in the Lord? And what he's saying here is, get a job, be productive, but give. Be generous. Americans statistically are the most generous nation on earth. We give more money away than anybody, and that's true in general by percentage as well, although the percentage looks a lot worse than the total amount. Over the last 20 years, 68% of Americans give 2% or less to charitable causes. 30% give nothing. And that's the best in the world. So on average, Christians are only a little bit better. People that identify as Christians give on average of 4%. We actually have some things in Scripture that, you know, we had the tithe in the Old Testament of 10%. That was a little different because that was the taxation system in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, there are things that would allude to 10% being the basis and then giving more on top of that. But one thing I want to look at real quick, if you turn to Romans 15, 25 through 27, Paul's going to talk about the Macedonians and their giving. James, do you have that by chance? You read it for me. 25 through 27, please.
But now I am going to Jerusalem, serving the saints. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make a contribution to the poor among the saints. Yes, they were pleased to do so, and they are indebted to them. For if the Gentiles have shared in their spiritual things, they are indebted to minister to them also in return.
Okay, so there's three things that we know that they did here. Obviously, the Macedonians gave. We see in this passage that they gave. There's three identifying things that were given to us here. They gave sacrificially. They didn't give out of an abundance. They gave out of their own poverty, their own indebtedness. It was supernatural. It was something that God had laid on their hearts, and it was surprising. It was worth mentioning even in the passage here. We have opportunities to really be generous with one another, to be able to give, to have an opportunity to be able to help people when those opportunities come up. It's a difficult thing sometimes when you have situations that come up where you have people that are constantly looking for help, and they're not doing what they need to be doing on their end to either manage money wisely, or they're not working, or there's various things like that. We have to be discerning. This is not we should give to every need every time something comes to our attention. But if we're involved with people, or involved in their lives, it kind of goes with what Ephesians 4:29 says, knowing the need of the moment, we have opportunities then to be able to see needs, and maybe we can help. And the big thing for us, though, as we look at this, is when we look at our finances, you can look at your financial statements. You can see what you're spending on. You can see what you're giving to. You can see what you're saving for, those types of things. And you could make some, it's up to the individual. It's a matter of conviction in a lot of ways. But look and see how that's looking. If you're seeing things in your finances that, you know, I really spent a lot of money on my own entertainment this month, and I'm not giving appropriately on the other end, that could reflect a heart problem. It's a good way to do that. Now, on the same token, you have the time issue. The difference between time and money, it's also a good reflection of your heart to see where you're at and what you're valuing. But on the time side, all of us have, unlike money, the same amount. So everybody gets 24 hours a day, right? There's no increases or decreases there. The things we have to do in that time however, can be different depending on the stage in life you're in. Turn over back to Ephesians, but we're going to go to verse 5. That's what I meant, chapter 5, verse 15, sorry. And Butch, since you corrected me, can you read this passage? 15 through 21, please.
Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time because the days are evil. So then, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is, and do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody with your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks for all things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to God, even the Father, and be subject to one another in the fear of Christ.
Okay, thanks. Who's reading King James in here? Anybody have King James? What does it say in verse, let's see, what verse is it? 16. Read 16 if you have a King James. Somebody that has King James, read verse 16. What's it say? Are you in verse chapter 5? Ephesians 5? Who had, Harold, do you have King James? Tim, what's it say? Okay. All right, so NASB says making the most of your time. King James says redeeming your time. I actually like redeeming the time a little better than making the most of it, because the days are evil. Redeeming the time actually is a somewhat similar idea to carpe diem, but the difference would be, how are you redeeming it? So, carpe diem, of course, is Latin for seize the day. But seize the day in the terms we usually think of it is more along the lines of usually some kind of fun or pleasure or pursuit of self. Here we're looking at redeeming the time because the days are evil, and we have to look at that. How are we redeeming the time? What does it mean? In the context of this passage, we're talking about redeeming the time spiritually and using it for as an ambassador for what we're supposed to be representing, which is Jesus Christ. And we have, it tells us not to get drunk with wine. Right after it says, do not be foolish, to be doing what the will of the Lord is. It says to speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. This is another extension of how we're supposed to use our time, but how it relates to one another. And the time management thing, I think, is a really big issue for us. And I'm going to spend a little more time on that than I wanted to on the money thing. Is Dennis German in here today? I don't think Dennis is here today. He came up to me last week after we talked about social media, and he said, I'm not on social media, he said, but I do a couple things to communicate with my daughter using some technology stuff. And he said, one thing that always strikes me is, in the last 10 years, we have this entire new thing that we're spending time on. I don't know what the average is. I'm sure there's research on it somewhere. But you know, how much time do you spend a day on Facebook or social media? Zero. Tomorrow is zero. Tomorrow's not on there. So, but most people are using time on these things, right? Is it a half hour a day? Is it 20 minutes a day? Is it an hour a day? Depends on what you're like. But the thing is, it's only been around for 10 years. What did it replace? What time did it replace? You're using it for something. For some people, you might just say, well, nothing, because I was watching TV anyway, and now I sit down on Facebook while I'm watching TV, and you're doing the same thing. For others, it may be pulling not necessarily, it may not be as obvious as saying, I replaced this for this. It may be that your attention just got pulled. One of the things I've noticed is that, like, let's say I'm with my kids doing something, we're playing, goofing off. And if I'm focused on them, we are having a good time, we're playing, but as soon as I decide to pull my attention to something else, let's say I get on Facebook and start looking, now they say the same thing they said to me 10 minutes ago, now it's irritating, right? So my attention pulled from one thing to the other, even though I might still be there with them, there was a replacement of attention. So there's all kinds of things we kind of pay attention to here. But and it's not just social media. That was just one example. There's a lot of things. What are some things that pull on our time that would, you know, in the amount of time we have, what are the biggest things that pull on our time? What do you spend most of your day doing? Work. First one, most people, I mean, we spend a lot of time working, don't we? Of course, then there's sleep too, but some of us sleep more than others probably, depending on if you have little kids in the house and stuff like that. What else? What else do you spend a lot of time doing? Driving. So for me, I drive at work. So I'm in my car constantly. It's fun some days and not fun other days. What else? Brian? Children's activities. Absolutely. For your kids or for the school? Both. So Brian's got a job in education. He's doing children's stuff all the time, and he's got his own kids. What else? TV. Yeah? Yep. We spend a lot of time and money on TV. No way. Mike? Reading. Okay. Good. Tomorrow? Oh, man. Grocery shopping and food preparation, especially if you got five people that are relying on you. Yeah. That's important. Special salads, yeah. Chris's diet. Yeah. That's hobbies. That's a good one. Yep. We spend a lot of time on hobbies. Huh? You don't. You spend a lot of time on work. What else do we spend time on? Yeah. All right, so outdoor work and maintenance, maybe around the property or whatever, and that can be a hobby too, I guess, but that's, yeah, taking care of your home. We spend a lot of time on that, don't we? What else? Anybody else got anything to spend a lot of time on? Karen?
We spend a lot of time with training people, and it's funny because we get a perspective.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. 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 If you think about, you know, in some places where you're in a third world type setting, I know that they're not in that situation. But in some places, you're spending most of your day just trying to eat or protect yourself from people that want to hurt you or from, I mean, all these things. Their lives are wrapped up in this stuff. We have, you know, general safety and comfort and provision and all that stuff. So we have the chances to fill our time with all kinds of interesting, fun things, right? And we all do that. And it's this is not to say that we should not have, I'm not going to go on a rant about not having hobbies or, you know, how we shouldn't ever do things for enjoyment and things like that. But what I hope to do is I hope to encourage us to maybe do some self-examination for how we're spending our times and where we are prioritizing. In this passage, there was three things that I kind of wanted to talk about. The passage here is not in any way overlooking your schedule as far as obligations go. I think it's easy for us sometimes to look at all of our obligations, and there might be a place for saying we need to cut something out. You know, if you was like the comedian said, if you only have time for a Pop-Tart in the morning, you might want to loosen up your schedule a little bit. You're probably doing too much. There are those things, but we do have obligations that we have to fulfill. Tamara mentioned shopping and preparing food and things like that. There's no getting around that stuff. It's also not saying that we have to turn our normal daily relationships into these abnormal witnessing opportunities. There's going to be times that we're interacting with one another on a regular level. What time do I have to be here? Or what are we, you know, what do you need? Tonight we're having small groups. What's everybody bringing for dinner? You know, and that type of thing. You have those interactions, and it's not always going to elevate to some kind of supernatural, like, witnessing opportunity, big spiritual thing every time. And that's not what we're saying here either. Using using your time wisely may include formal ministries, such as teaching or nursery or missions trips and things that the church has doing. But what it's really referring to more is the lifestyle committed to God's purposes. And it encompasses our daily lives. And most of what we're doing is mundane, right? It's just, we do a lot of the similar things every week. And most of our life is there. And we need to be focused on, it's a heart thing, just like everything else we've talked about, on pleasing God and serving others in everything that we do. And so we're not saying that, okay, I'm going to drop this thing I've been doing and I'm going to go do this thing at church, this program at church. You may do that. That might be part of what you should do, or it may not be. I'll give you a kind of an example. I had my wife, actually, I'll use her example better because it's similar. She had somebody that she was meeting with several years back, a younger girl who, and she was just, it was an ongoing conversation. And this girl had a lot of needs and helps, and it turned into more of like a discipleship thing more than it was a friendship. But we got to the point where it didn't seem to be helping, and we had, at that time, two kids, and Hadley was a baby, and it became kind of an irritation. So they'd sit there, and she would have to tend to the baby's needs, and this person would get irritated because wasn't focusing on what she was saying. And there was, so it was a ministry opportunity, and it was ongoing, but she also had this responsibility that was pulling her away. In that kind of a situation, what do? You have a decision to make. You have a priority to set. I have to control this somehow because obviously I'm neglecting my baby, and I've got this reality that I'm in, but this person's also asking for help. And so we used to talk about that a lot, and it's like, okay, the solution, I think, ultimately is, we have half hour time, or we have an hour time, or whatever it is. I'm going to give this, and I'm going to do this ministry, but it can't go longer than that, and it's got to be set and set. And you guys may have this, the counseling people may have these similar type situations where you have a formal time, and that's going to be it, but I've got to deal with my kids. Before that, it wasn't an issue, because the kids weren't there pulling at the time, so you could spend the time that you needed. So there's priorities that we have to set at times like that. I actually have a hard time sometimes when I think about being on the elder board. We have people that are in different times of life, right? So Harold and Mike are in a different time in life than I am because of the family situation. Their kids are up and out of the house. And I would sometimes watch Mike and I'd be like, man, Mike can get around and talk to pretty much everybody in his elder group. And I think you make a point to try to do that to the best of your ability, right? Every Sunday. And I'm just trying to run down and, you know, save somebody from cannon. Yeah, and what do you do with that? You know, is that fair to my people in my elder care group? Is it, you know, you have these things that you have to decide and you have to try to make priorities out of. At the end of the day, I think it is a good idea for people with young families to probably be in ministry in those types of ways, because if we're not in the room learning from guys like Mike and Harold, when we do get to that point, what are we going to know? There's an opportunity for discipleship there, and that's true of all the ministries that you could potentially be involved in. But one thing what became convicting to me as I read through this chapter in the relationships book this week was we all are in an appointed time in life, and some of us are, you know, okay, some of you in the room here are single. We have widows, widowers. We have married people. We have parents. We have children. Some of you are still working. Some of you are retired. There's people in here that are students. And these things are going to change as you go through life. I mean, there was a time, right, where I was a single student, and then I became a married guy, and then we had the double income, no kids thing going, and then we had kids. And these things kind of, as you go through life, kind of change, and it changes our situation every time we go through one of those changes. And we have to almost redevelop these priorities every time we make these kind of adjustments in our lives. But one thing that's for sure is that in God's sovereignty, He gave us our situation, right? We have been given the situation we're in with whatever that is. And we have to be able to be discerning and identify what to do. And I think it's easy. We see these types of things happen even here at the church, where we have somebody that's really involved in ministry. Maybe they're working with the youth and that type of thing. And then they get married. Well, now they have a new person to be ministering to and to be growing with, and their ministry changes. And hopefully they don't slide out and slide away from ministry, but it's okay for it to change. You know, when Kim and I moved back here, we were involved with the high school kids. Well, then we got a little bit too old. We're not nearly cool enough for the high school kids anymore. And we had kids. So our ministry had to change. What we were doing with our time had to change. And hopefully there's new people in a different situation that are moving in behind us that can do that. And it goes all the way up like that. So there's these situations we have to pay attention to. We already went through the list of things that pull from our time. I think there are things that are obvious that we need to probably control. It's a matter of discipline, right? So I'm not going to stand here and say, you know what, if you're on social media and you have young kids, you're in sin or something like that. But I think we do need to start paying attention to, okay, I'm going to leave something practical I did here a little while back is I took the Facebook app off my phone. Just take it off because now I can't access it. The only way I can actually access it is if I actually go sit down on a computer or I use my iPad and I have to actually go log in. There's just an extra step there. And it helped, you know, in a lot of ways. Now I'm not tempted to sit, when I'm sitting there and I become bored with what my kids are doing, to sit there and like just out of boredom flip it on and start you know, scrolling through. We can make little adjustments like that that can help us with our discipline. And it doesn't have to be just, like I said, social media. It may be, you know, I know when I was, when Kim and I just moved back here and we were younger, we had cable. I had Fox Sports Midwest, and I would every night just turn on the Cardinal game, every night. That happened for about a year until Kim had a problem with it, and then she said something to me. Okay, well, let's figure this out, and ultimately what we decided to do was, well, we're spending a bunch of money on this, you know, DirecTV stuff. Let's just get rid of it, and so we haven't had Dish or DirecTV for like almost a decade now, and I don't really miss it. It's kind of interesting. I mean, you have other things you can follow. You know, if you like baseball, we'll get the MLB app and follow it that way. You don't have to spend as much time watching it and stuff like that. So you can still have a hobby, but you can make minor adjustments that save you a lot of time. And for me, it had to just be remove the temptation. So whatever that looks like in your life, whatever's sucking time away, I would encourage you to just be honest with yourself, take a look at that, and make those adjustments. But this stuff is all kind of practical stuff, but it all just bears out of a heart of are we serving one another? If I'm wrapped up in this, can I serve over here? Or if all of a sudden you come in contact with a person that needs your help, but you know I'm kind of busy because I'm trying to get to this thing that I'm going to, am I able to serve based on that busy schedule? And maybe the answer is that it's a priority thing. Maybe what I'm going to is more important, and we can reschedule, or you know, maybe it's not the right time. But if it's not, maybe I have to clear that out so that I can actually be a part of that person's life. So that would be my encouragement. Again, just as being ambassadors, we are to be displaying, we're to be representing Christ to one another. And if we are pursuing our own interests all the time, and we're using our time and money the way we want to use it, and not looking at it that way, we can really damage our relationships with people. And so on and so forth. So the last thing I want to talk to you about on this was a whole Sunday school class. Mike, when did you do the fear of man? Last year sometime, wasn't it? Okay, so last year sometime, Mike taught on fear of man, and he used this book. It's called Courage, Fighting Fear with Fear by Wayne and Josh Mack. I would encourage you, just like this book, we do have several of these books in the counseling ministry, Mike will be happy to take your money and give you a book. So if you need that, and we also have a few of the relationship books. This book is outstanding. And in what ways, I want to open this up a little bit, in what ways can the fear of man negatively affect relationships? There's a whole bunch of things that it could do to impact a relationship, but how would fear of man, Mike? Okay, debilitating. Yeah, why is that? Okay. Right. So you're afraid of whatever it is you might lose. I might not be liked. I might lose money. I might, whatever it is, and it just debilitates you and you do nothing. Yeah. Yep. Right. And you realize that other people may damage your ability to get what you want, right? If they're not going to help me pursue my success in some way, if they're not going to make me feel a certain way, so on and so forth, so you can damage it that way. That's another hand over here somewhere. Keith? Yeah, good. You just totally withdraw from people because of that, yeah. What about, this is an easy one. I think a lot of times, and it kind of probably is a stop short of withdrawal, but it can lead to superficial relationships because we're not willing to share, you know. All of us have problems, and a lot of times we stop short of, we don't want people to know that I don't have all my stuff together, and I've got these sin things I'm dealing with, and so we want to put on a facade of, I've got my stuff together, and I'm not going to disclose anything to this other person, and it can lead to just having superficial relationships all around us. We never get involved with anybody. Proverbs 29:25 says, the fear of man brings a snare. The fear of man is actually the direct opposite of trusting the Lord. It's direct competition. And there's several things that cause, or a couple things that the book lines out here that causes the fear of man. One of them is unbelief. He who fears God does not fear man, but if you are ignorant of who God is, then you will fear man. And seeing God for who he is actually puts all these things into perspective. So unbelief can happen because of ignorance. We're just not reading the scriptures and looking at who God is and how big he is. Unbelief can happen because we distort who God is. We make up our own attributes for him. And we refuse to look. In other words, we have an unbiblical view. And unbelief can happen because of the sinful, hardened hearts and those just who simply refuse to believe. Those are the things that lead to unbelief. The other thing that can lead to fear of man is idolatry. And that's kind of what was already discussed earlier here with when you fear man and you aren't putting your trust, then you aren't putting your trust in God. But if you trust God, you're not trusting someone else. When you put your trust in something other than God, it's idolatry. And we don't have time to read it, but Psalm 33:16-21 alludes to that. When you die and you stand before God one day, it isn't going to matter one bit if you had a fan club here on earth. It's not going to matter who liked you and who didn't like you here. So if we begin to think that way and have an eternal perspective on, am I doing what's right by God, all the fear of man stuff melts away. We will not be nearly as worried about maybe what someone might think or if it's going to hurt, you know, is it going to result in some kind of scorn for me? And we will be able to live out our lives as ambassadors the way that we want to. It's the only way, actually, that we can. But I will say this, fearing man robs us of so much. Robs us of joy, robs us of potential opportunities in ministry, it robs us of being able to invest in other people, and because we have these fears that push that. As we consider our relationships, these are big obstacles, these two things. There's a lot more that pop up into our lives, but as we go through our lives, whether, you know, with every interaction we have, as we stated at the beginning of the class, every relationship you have and every position you're in life is under the umbrella of God's sovereignty. There are no surprises. There is nothing that wasn't intentional, and we have the opportunity to have really productive and fulfilling relationships if we interact in those relationships as ambassadors instead of as kings and queens. And so we need to consider these things, and my goal, again, with today was more about just reflection, and hopefully you guys will, you know, as we go through the week, you'll have the opportunity to think, okay, am I using my money as it God's? Am I using it that way? Am I using my time that way? When I was going through this, it was extremely convicting. And the good news was, even I think it was that chapter was written by Tim Lane. He said the same thing. It's impossible to write something like this in that chapter and not feel convicted. This is a lifelong issue. And as things change in your life from season to season, We have to do the same, we have to take the same kind of inventory. Am I pleasing God with this? Am I putting others first? Am I using what's been given to me, both in relationships and time and money? Am I using those to the best of my ability as an ambassador for God? So that's my challenge to you. We have time. We've got about 1 minute. We have time for one comment. If anybody's...
Great job.
Great job. Well, that's a comment I was looking for. Okay. Darren, will you close us in prayer?